Amen. Good morning. Good to see everybody here today. And appreciate you coming. Good to see this good crowd. And we got a beautiful day. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And we're going to get right into it. So I wasn't here last week because a pastor in Plainview, his mom had passed away. So he called me on Thursday and asked me to go. My son happened to be in town to preach for us. And I said, just take this class too. So he did, and I appreciate that, but I kind of got behind on some things, and so normally I do a chapter. We go through a chapter. We're in Genesis, but have a few slides up front, either tied to that or a little bit of what's going on around the world, but there's so much going on. Today will be a little bit unusual. I got to get caught up on some things, but I think everything is, I wouldn't do current events if I didn't think it was something we needed to be aware of, and I really do. So that's what we'll do today, but it's good to have some folks rounded up here. Fane's back. He and his family have caught everything that's come to town, basically, and so, but they're doing better, and we've been praying for them for a while, and it's good to have the Bighams here with us. And they come every Sunday after Thanksgiving and have for many years, and so it's good to have them. We're looking forward to that. I've told Brother Bigham this before, so it's not just because he's here today, but if you've been in church a long time, you heard a lot of messages and a lot of preachers preach, you end up, I do at least, you got four or five messages kind of at the top of your list that you never forget. You think, in fact, I've got the notes, kind of pretty current, or in front of me to remind me of some things. And one or two of those is Brother Bigham's messages that he's preached here over the years that I consider treasured, that have helped me, and just appreciate them so much. And he's an encouragement, and you will be blessed. So be sure, and of course, stay for morning service. Come back this afternoon, and you'll be blessed for that. Pray for one another. Joe's still having some heart troubles. If you'd pray for him. And Gary asked me, Gary asked Brother Jim and I to pray for him because he's got to have a tooth pulled this week. Jim and I assured him that if he wanted to meet with us this afternoon after church, we could get it done. And it wouldn't cost him, we wouldn't charge, no charge. No, between Jim and I, we'll get that thing. We got about 3 hours, three or four hours there between him and if a couple of guys yank on that thing for 3 or 4 hours, we'd get it done. But he didn't seem interested, so, that's all I can do, So, anyway. All right. We got it going here? Yes, we do. So, we're going to start in Isaiah 17. I'm just going to look at a verse or two there, and then we're going to get into some things with regard to Syria. So, I'm going to hold the Genesis thing for today, and we're planning to pick up on it next week. But so much had happened, and really it's got to do primarily with Syria and the stuff that's happening right now. And because it is prophetic, and our country's involved, and a lot of places are involved, and amazingly enough, it's hardly even talked about. And even in our news. And so the election and post-election has really taken all the air out of the room. And so there's very little left for other things. But the Bible prophesies in Isaiah 17, verse 1, the burden of Damascus, Damascus being the capital of Syria, and the of a city that people have lived in the longest number of years. I'm not trying to say it's the oldest city in the world. It is one of the oldest cities in the world, but it's the longest continually inhabited city in our world today. People have lived there for thousands of years. This Isaiah, when he prophesied, the city was going, even then, of course, obviously. And so the burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. I'm going to read some more in a second, but what that prophecy is saying is one day it's not going to be a lived-in city. One day it's going to be a heap of stones, And that has not happened yet. It has not happened during its history. It's been watched a long time because of this prophecy. And so every time things heat up, we wonder if this verse is going to find fulfillment, and it's worth watching right now. Although there's some, you have to take the whole context here. In this case, there's some other places. The cities of Aroer are forsaken. That's kind of that. Actually, that is sort of that a little bit south of there, and hits some areas that would be south of there that are not forsaken yet. They shall be for flocks which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The fortress also shall cease from Ephraim. Who's Ephraim? Yeah, so now we're getting into Joseph's sons. We haven't got there yet in Genesis, but Ephraim and Manasseh, those tribes are kind of in that what we would call the northern kingdom region, and a lot of times the Bible in prophecy will say Ephraim, or once in a while even Manasseh, and they're referring to the 10 tribes and then all the 10 tribes in the north. That's what this one refers to. So it says here, the fortress shall also cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant, or the rest of Syria, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, saith the Lord of hosts. And in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob, that's referring now when it says there, of all Israel, shall be made thin, and the fatness of his flesh shall wax lean. So the point is here, there'll be a lot of people say, use Isaiah 17, which I'm using also, but I'm trying to give you the full picture here, that Damascus is going to be destroyed. It could be leading up to that, but when Isaiah 17 finds fulfillment, that whole area north of Israel, I got a map I'll show you in a moment, will in fact come under scrutiny. And there's some more here we could talk about if I get time, which I don't think that I will. I had so many slides. In fact, I walked in today, and Brother David, I understand, is preaching in Midland. And I always send my slides. I usually don't send them out. I work on them all the time. It could be every single day if something comes up or the lesson or something. But I don't send them until usually Saturday afternoon, because for some reason there's always one or two things I need to put in and send to David. Well, David's in Midland, so it just so happened Gerald, who also helps me, and he found, knew David was out, so he found the slides, entered the wrong ones the first time. I said, man, they're out of being if you'd have done that. But then he got them in, and he's good, does real good for that. But he said, you got a lot of slides. And I said, you didn't even see the ones that we threw out, I threw out. So I've got to get moving here. But I want to talk about Syria, because this has been a mess for years. It was a mess then. It's going to be a mess in the future. And what we're seeing could lead up to something. I don't know if you can see that or not. So I'm going to more or less read it for you. But if you remember the Obama administration in there was a group called ISIS. And they were called wreaking havoc, taking over a lot of territory, 2011, 12 in there, and so forth. And they were not just in Syria, but around. They escaped to Syria. Syria today is a failed nation in a lot of factions. I didn't put a slide in that showed who controls what in the different areas of the country, but I could have, might have been helpful. But there's a president there named Assad, and he's the son of the other president, Assad, who all this time they've been very close to Russia. And if Russia hadn't propped them up through the years, it would have already been worse than it is. But the people are not happy with Assad, and so there's this rebel group inside Syria that's fighting them. And the U.S., we are supporting this rebel group, and because we were trying to, and some other countries as well, France and U.K., some Arab nations, including Saudi Arabia, all funding, sometimes with our own weapons, sometimes with our own people, a lot of U.S. dollars especially, to prop up this rebel group. You might remember, I put this in the last tagline there, Obama's red line when he was there, he said, to Assad, if you use chemical weapons on your own people, we're coming in. He did use chemical weapons on his own people. There was so much resistance and such a complicated situation that Obama did not go in, which was the right decision because you're not quite sure who you're fighting and why you're fighting. So he did not. But in fact, it's gotten worse. And, you know, my point here is going to be this, sort of the big point I want you to see, is Syria and Damascus is in prophecy. When it goes down, Israel's going to find itself lean as well, is what the Bible says. And so that's worth watching and keeping an eye on. But there are so many groups right now that it's sort of hard to go in there and know what if you're doing any good or not, and know which side you need to be on. And there's different campaigns. Of course, we still have 400 men there, 400 troops there, and we're trying to really. They're there to help completely stamp out what's left of ISIS. That's the reason we're there. But there's war between the Arabs and the U.S.-backed rebels, and there's war by Turkey against the Kurds. I'm going to talk about the Kurds in a second. And then I'm just going to give you this name just to watch. I don't really myself like it when we or other countries fund an army that is not under, that is not your nation's army. In other words, we support this SDF, which is the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is a group that, of mercenaries, you might say, that would be willing to go and fight anywhere. And the reason I don't like that is, you can find yourself, they're independent, and they, for the right money, they'd pretty much fight anybody and might fight some of our allies. If we had the wrong administration, we might use them even against Israel, and there we'd be. You know, we've studied Genesis 12. We know that would be a mistake, using your and I tax dollars to do that. And this group is on the fringe of that sometimes, and so it is concerning. And I really think it's not a good. It's my opinion. I don't think it's a great policy. Now this is the area, just so we all on the same page. So this is Israel down here, Jerusalem right there, Mediterranean Sea. Lebanon has been in the news, and I'll get to Lebanon today. Of course, Israel's been fighting in 8 different fronts. A couple of those in the north here, you hear mostly about Lebanon. Lebanon is another failed state, but years ago, Lebanon, Beirut right here, was considered kind of the U.S. of Europe, and we had an American university there and all that. That's been years ago. Now it's that's where Hezbollah is at. And there are Christians in Lebanon. I was preaching in New Mexico several months back. There's a couple there from Lebanon that are saved and love the Lord and just hate to see what's happened to their country. But they support Israel. So it's not everybody there, which is most of the time true. Here is Damascus. So in this area right here of Israel, this Golan Heights area, if you get on the right, this is a pretty high area, and on certain days, you feel like you can, and I've heard people say you can see Damascus. I won't necessarily make that comment, but it's, you can, because that's a long little ways, but some people say they have, so good clear day. Now, but this area right here is in, I'm telling you, it is not where you'd want to show up and just not know where the bunker is, if you know what I mean. It's pretty tough. Now, here is Aleppo. Well, you got Iraq, Turkey, and Syria. Aleppo is depending on the day, is the largest populated city in Syria or Damascus is. And if you look it up, you're going to find references, depending on the age of the reference, that say both. But Syria has had such a turnover in people, it's difficult over the years. So this has been going on over a decade. And I'll give you some numbers in a moment. But those two, make up big city. Well, Aleppo all but fell, and may have by now fell in the last 2 or 3 days to the rebels. It was said that Assad had to get out of the country. I studied this morning and got all the news I could. I don't think he's out. I think he's there in Damascus. But it was like the country fell, like yesterday or you might say, last night. Now, that's going to be interesting if it did. Now, Turkey's there because they're fighting primarily the Kurds. Erdogan does not like the Kurds, and he's always fighting them. And the Kurds live sort of in this region of Turkey, in this region of Syria, and this part of Iraq. Kind of, if I go outside the thing, it's kind of, I'll show you a map in a moment. But so he's fighting them. And so you got Russia, Iran, the U.S., Turkey, all helping sort of different groups, which puts us against, you know, all of those nations. Point out one other thing that in a few weeks ago in our study in Genesis, we ran across those verses where the Lord to Abraham gave a pretty clear outline of what he considers to be the land grant he gave to Israel. And I said at the time that it not only goes from the Nile River on one border, but it goes to the Euphrates on the other. This is the Euphrates River right here. And so you can imagine, I repeat the same statement I made there, but just as a different map in mind, you can imagine the heartburn in this world if through some of this that's happening now, we wake up and Israel has conquered land all the way to the Euphrates. Now, the Persian Gulf goes down here. There are some people that believe Israel, that God meant, look, I'm going to give them all this. Now, I don't know if that's the case. It could still be fulfilled even if God said we're going to, you know, kind of give them, you know, this area. But even that, I'm telling you, right now, if Israel builds an apartment on a little spot in Judea or Samaria, it's you know, oh, it's in the news, you know. But you can imagine if they start taking over a country or something. And so I think Christians ought to be aware of this, since it's prophesied, and some of this stuff looks to be happening in our very day. And so that's the reason that I bring this up. This is just a little different map of the same thing, but it backs out a little. You see all of Turkey here. So this is Syria, Iraq, Iran, and these dots are where the Kurds live. Now, how many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, just this is a rhetorical question, have heard of the two-state solution? Yes, we all have. Because, you know, our president gets up all the time, two-state solution. Every nation around Israel, two-state solution. Well, when they mean that, they're talking about the Palestinians need a state. But, we've gone through, we're going to go through a little more. Once I get a little further in Genesis, we're going to pick up Esau. And I'm going to prove to you through the Bible and through historical things that, in fact, the Palestinians are the Edomites. And that you go back and read that chapter there where Rebekah was pregnant with the twins, Jacob and Esau. They struggled in the womb. Those two boys have been fighting, basically since conception. And they're fighting today, Israel and the Palestinians and so forth. Two-state solution we need. But nobody ever says anything about the Kurds. Several million. They want Kurdistan. They want to carve out their own land and have their own country. They're constantly having to fight, and they've got their several armies of themselves. They've got the countries they're in. Nobody likes, you know, they don't trust them, and so therefore they don't like them. Erdogan especially, but it's true in Iran also. And you never hear anybody, I'm not pushing for them a country, I'm just pointing out that, I'm pointing this out. If it's a biblical prophecy, you see it in our news. God is putting that out there for us. God could put a big, could have said a lot about the Kurds, and he didn't say that. Basically, that's the Medes, by the way. If you want to go to a biblical name of a people, Medo-Persian Empire, what's left of the Parthians then, they were, and then now the Kurds. Basically, that's the Medes from the Medo-Persian Empire. And they never really, you know, they lost the empire and they've congregated but never had their nation. And so I'm watching those Kurds because I'm not so sure. I mean, they keep hanging around. They keep, you know, living together. They're not separated. They're not integrated in any place. And I just find that interesting. I think it's worth watching, but they're not there, and they're in it today at Syria. And so I pointed out. I also just point out the hypocrisy, because they've got a difficult life as well, and nobody's hollering for them a state. Nobody will, you know, and why would that be? Well, I mean, I just feel like it's all biblical. It just proves, once again, the Bible is true. Just a few more points on this war. Russia has actively supported Assad, or he wouldn't have made it. Actively supported this Assad's father, who was the one who, in 1972, one of the ones that invaded Israel. They've given air power, primarily Iraq as well, but Russia's really been in there. Russia's also sent the Wagner Group in there, and is in there today. Some of that group is in there today. Wagner Group is their paid army that they send off into places. Trump did remove most, when he got in office, Obama had a lot of troops in there, and Trump removed all that he could, left 400 basically just to chase down ISIS. Biden has since doubled that to 900. You don't hear about it, but that is in fact. And since the Hamas attack in October of last year, our troops have been fired on 165 times, and we've lost some of them. Not many, but I mean, one's too many. It's a handful we've lost. And yet, look, I'm going to make a statement. You're going to say, well, it's a political statement. It's not a political statement. I don't mean it to be a political statement. I'm just trying to show some things here. People get up and talk about Palestinians like they know all about it. But our vice president got up in her debate and said, you know, we've got no troops in harm's way. Nothing is going on anywhere in the world for the first time in how many ever years, she said. And I thought, really? I mean, they're firing on our troops right now in Syria. I mean, you know, and we got more armor and more ships in the Mideast right now than we've had in a long time. I mean, somebody needs to wake up. This world is, there's stuff going on here. When you got every major country plus Russia in the Mideast, you know, tangling with each other, sparring a little bit and this and that, and you have these episodes like we had the last 2 days, it's something to watch. It's something that ought to be, you know, somebody ought to be kind of carefully managing that. This has been a mess that nobody's cared about. I mean, 7 out of 10 Syrians are in need of humanitarian assistance. 7 out of 10. There's probably over, by my guess, over 22 million still there. So you figure that. That's about 7 out of 10. You know, you're talking 14, 15 million or something that need, you know, some number that's in my head. So calculate it might be off a little bit. So roughly 600,000 people have died. 600 Palestinians. I'm not downplaying the Palestinian one, but I'm just saying that's the one you hear about. I'm going to show you a picture in a minute of Biden's latest book purchase. And yet 600,000 Palestinians haven't lost their lives over, you know. 6.9 people internally displaced, 5.4 have had to exit the country. They've made a mass exodus to various places, including the United States, but mostly in Europe, but also to Jordan and Turkey and some places like that. There was a time last year that Turkey was really saber-rattling against Israel, and that was the night, if you remember, that God sent a 7.8 magnitude earthquake primarily on Turkey, but it affects Syria as well. And quieting things down for a little bit. That earthquake killed 60,000 people, but it disrupted the infrastructure between the two countries so severely that a lot of aid is very difficult to get in. And so let me give you one more thing here. Oh, yeah, this is where Iran gets involved. They've been involved, but then the president of Iran, which is Rossi, he went and met with Assad, promised and set up some economic cooperation. Rossi, though, he's the one that died in the helicopter crash. Essentially, every leader in this world, not necessarily from the U.S., but if you think about it, I'm going back to Genesis 12 now. I will bless those that bless. I'm going to just paraphrase it, okay? Bless those that bless Israel, curse those that curse Israel. That's essentially what that verse means. Amen. Go back then, since then, every leader in this mess we've had for the last couple years, I'm talking about of the high group. Now, they always can replace them, so there's leaders today. I'm not saying there's not, but the presidents of countries and at one time the head of Hamas or the head of Hezbollah or so, they're gone. They're dead. Either through just strange things like a helicopter crash or something else. So I wonder if that statement in the Bible is true. Because I think it is, isn't it? That's what's happened. So Rossi, he died in that crash. Nevertheless, right in that time, Assad and Syria, after slaughtering 500,000 of his own people, he was readmitted to the Syrian League, to the Arab League, to the Arab League of 20-some nations that are mostly Arab. And that was astonishing that they'd kicked him out and then they let him back in. Very just astonishing to me. And of course, Iran has got installments in Syria, and so Israel is, when they were fighting in the north, I'll talk about the ceasefire in a moment, but when they were fighting in the north, Israel was hitting primarily a lot of Iranian assets, and this was giving Iran a lot of, various heartburn various days. So I hope you're getting a picture that this thing is confusing and a mess. By the way, I got up real early this morning. I studied again because I was afraid, some stuff happened overnight, and it did. I would have written some of this stuff a little bit differently, knowing what I know now. But as of yesterday afternoon, this is where things were. But it's very fluid. So if we go home this afternoon and things are a little different, or some other rebel group is in charge, or if Assad is left or something like that, well, we do the best we can. Things are really happening. All right, so I think I'll go on. I think we beat that one good enough. So Iran has got on the thing, and of course they're claiming that the U.S. and Israel did this. Israel did not instigate this. U.S. didn't really either. It's just that terrorist group that we support, that army we support. They did. They're fighting Assad, and they fought. And nevertheless, this guy's yesterday is making broadcast, and this fellow also from Iran is basically saying we're going to take care of Israel, and then we're going to come and take care of the U.S. Then there was a lot, one thing that is interesting that happened, there was a lot of back and forth between Russia and Erdogan, Russia and Turkey, Putin and Erdogan, who are friends, but each have their own, interest in the region. They're not always the same. Russia is very much supporting Assad. Turkey is very much just against the Kurds, but he wants some territory and so forth. So, basically, Russia first got the blame for Aleppo falling or nearly falling by saying, Russia, you're supposed to be guarding that, and you've diverted all your planes back into your war. And so they were back and forth, Erdogan and Putin, basically blaming each other for things. And I wouldn't think that's going to be all that long-lasting, but... Now, let's keep that in mind. So that is really blowing up today. I mean, it is something that we may hear about. It's something that we're in a transition in our president and we just need to, it'd be good to take some of these issues to the Lord and ask for peace in the world and peace in Jerusalem and so forth, because this thing could get out of hand with these countries. These are nuclear countries. These are countries with powerful armies, and things can happen. I have been concerned, and mentioned this before, but Obama, on his way out of the door after he had served his 8 years and he was a lame duck, it was after the second election in December, I believe it was the 23rd or 24th of that year, so he's a couple of weeks before Trump would take over for the first time, he did not veto a UN resolution that condemned Israel. And that was the first time, I believe, ever, or if we'd done it before, it was historically a long time ago, and he that was called the December surprise, the Obama December surprise against Netanyahu. And there's been a lot of speculation, including by me, that that was going to happen again, that Obama would do the same thing, and I was watching it to see what he would do. And in fact, of course, the UN did their thing, which we still give them millions, and they still make resolutions against Israel. But we did veto it, and so I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Now he did some other stuff, which I'll talk about, but he vetoed this one. I pulled up these permanent members just so you could see. China, France, Russia, the UK, and the United States are the five permanent members of the Security Council, the UN, and all those have veto power. So if they make a resolution, any of them can just veto it. The other members that you see there, Algeria and Japan and so forth, they are rotating members. And so other countries get in there from time to time. But at the top, that's who runs the thing, and they all have veto power. And this vote against Israel, which did not let our hostages back. I mean, basically it was a ceasefire but didn't let our hostages out, which what kind of a deal is that, you know? So we vetoed it. We're the only ones that vetoed it. The only ones. It was 14-1. I'm going to just show you, and I'm going to stay on the next topic for one slide, and I'm going to get right back, but just as a point here, just to reinforce even what I just said, there's a war in Sudan. Hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives. Similar, I would say, to Syria. Huge mess. You never hear about this thing. Huge mess. I know more about it because of missionaries that we have in kind of South Sudan and Kenya and some places than we do from the news cycle. And this thing is a humanitarian disaster. And if you really care about people, you know, you would fix, and get in some things. If you were going to really try to do something about peace, you know, in the world and to help people, Sudan and Syria would be good, and Lebanon, of course, would be good places to try to iron out some situations, but it's extremely difficult, extremely complicated. The UN Security Council did finally come up with a resolution to help South Sudan, and it was 14-1, and Russia vetoed it. Russia, why would you veto something that should have helped, you know? I mean, I'm just looking at the people there who have nothing anyway, and it's just a terrible situation. Biden did take time to sanction several Israeli people. So he didn't sanction the whole country, but several probably billionaires that are putting money behind certain things, he sanctioned them, basically shutting them down. You kind of can... What he can do is, for example, if you have any credit cards, just say, or any other bank cards, he can go to all the banks, because they're all tied to the Federal Reserve, and say, don't do any business with old Mike anymore. And that pretty well shut me down, right? And you down. I mean, like, we're not a cashless society. I mean, we're kind of a cashless society. That's tough. And he can do that. And that's what he did here is basic. Then he can go to international banks and say, look, I'm not your dictator. I'm not your president, but we're not going to do any business with your country if your banks do business with this guy. And the banks, they'll just shut it down, make sure. That's exactly what happens to these days. So he did that against some, and that he didn't like the way they were doing some things. And then he gave millions of your dollars and my dollars to the Palestinians. So he's done that. And then yesterday, now, I don't know what to make of this. I honestly have thought about it a while. I do not have a clue, but for Black Friday, you probably have seen this. He went to the bookstore and bought a book on, that's the cover on the left. He's not on the cover. They photoshopped his picture. They put his picture behind the cover. History of settler colonialism and resistance from 1917 to 2017, 100 years. This guy that wrote it, anti-Israel, blames Israel for everything. And takes a very extreme, slanted view. Now, why did he buy that? Okay, anybody can read. I read some stuff. I take some stuff that I read so you don't have to, just to be honest, because it'll make you sick. I mean, I've got a couple things that I'll just tell you, pay attention to, subscribe to even, that it makes me so mad every time I read them that it doesn't do me. But I have to find out what the other side's thinking sometimes, and what's going on. And so I do. Now, if he's doing that, and really the president ought to know what's happened there. You and I know probably what's happened there but you ought to get it from a fair source. Now, why did he pick that guy and that book and all that? I do not know. And then show everybody that could not be a mistake. No, but I don't know the message he was trying to give there. I don't know. My point again is, why don't you fix Sudan, Syria or Sudan or something? The Palestinian thing with Hamas is about over. So I didn't understand it, but that's what's going on with regard to that. Now, my son Jeremy taught last week. The week before, went through a chapter in Genesis, but we showed a couple other slides just so to let you know that that the UK and some other countries wanted us to give permission for Ukraine to use long-range missiles into Russia. U.S.-made missiles from Ukraine to Russia, which Putin considers a threat. Remember the last thing I said before I closed down is just pray he doesn't, because that would be bad. I mean, basically, it pits us directly into war. And I mean, it was that afternoon he let him go. He decided to do it. And several of you, Sunday night, he did it. And he did. And, of course, Russia has come back, and they've shown off a new missile. I'm sure we knew about it, but basically a lot of countries and a lot of news outlets did not know. But this is a pretty... and he sent it basically... To send a message, Putin did, that, look, I got some stuff you don't even know about, and I'm serious about that. I'm serious, and I want you to get serious. He sent that message to us. You're going to play with a bear here, and that's all I was trying to say 2 weeks ago. We did evacuate our embassy in Kyiv, which was a good move, because the thought was, at least that Sunday afternoon, that If Putin does something and sends back, what he may do is try to hit the American embassy in Kyiv, because that would do two things. It would send a long-range missile back into Ukraine, but it would also hurt directly the Americans, and he did not. And we've gone back in there, and then we've evacuated a time or two. But Russia is not happy with us right now for a lot of reasons. Neither is Iran. Russia's not for a lot of reasons. They are feeling the heat because of the United States clearly on the side of, I'm not making a deal for you, I'm just saying we've given a lot of money on the side of Ukraine. Whether you agree with that or not, that's a fact, and I'm not saying one way or the other. What I'm saying is, though, we put some sanctions on Russia. Like I was talking about those banks a while ago, that's what we've done to anybody in Russia and the Russian government. None of our banks can deal with Russia in the U.S. dollar. We did it through the dollar. And then we went to other countries and said, You cannot use the U.S. dollar to even trade with Russia. Well, what are they going to use? Because, you know, so that put Russia in a bind because everybody likes to trade with the U.S. dollar because it's stable and we do not manipulate our currency like other countries do. And so when we, just by doing that, we pretty much shut them down. Well, China, up until, I've told you this before, but just to get the picture because the teeth are starting to come in here, China was the back door and trading, they're big enough, of course, and trading with Russia, giving everything they need, and they're trading in the Chinese yuan. So in the Chinese currency, they would take Russian rubles and trade with them and so forth. So then we, now this is a never reported, but it's out there, and I told you about this. We went in and told China, we're going to stop buying your stuff if after October of 2024, you don't shut that back door to Russia. And they shut it. Because they got to have our, China, regardless what you hear or see, they've got to have our business or they will fall apart. Their economy is really suffering right now anyway. And they've not picked up since COVID. And you don't hear about that either, but right now it's very, this week, Russia's central bank, this was 2 or 3 days ago, halts currency buying until sometime in 2025. In other words, let's say you were going to Canada and you wanted, instead of using a credit card, you wanted Canadian dollars. You could go to a bank somewhere. You'd have to call them ahead of time sometime. But you could trade dollars. Basically, you could buy Canadian currency. And that way you could spend it up in Canada like that. You cannot do that with Russian currency any longer, and it was getting pretty hard anyway. And that's because, you know, the ruble is this buying and selling. The numbers were getting out of hand of the dollar compared to the, you know, the exchange rate there. Plus, they're running out of money, and they were completely shut off. And it's a difficult situation. I see I'm out of time, so I know. Give me. That means I got 1 minute, right? When I'm out of time, I'll quit. I just thought this was an interesting article yesterday. I mean, people in Russia are stealing their basic necessities because the money's getting short. Now, just saying, people, when you get desperate for food, or in the case of Putin, who has a lot of money himself, but the country itself starts, you know, and it's just, it could be a desperate situation and just need to be, they don't call on the bear for nothing. And just keep that in mind. We keep that in mind as we watch. One thing that, and I thought this was not a dumb move. If you're going to do peace and somebody needs, they're weakened a little bit and maybe willing to talk, it's probably a good time. And so I feel like Zelensky weakened his own position, said, look, Putin, you can have what you've taken. I'm going to call it temporary because we may fight a war one of these days. But basically, I'll stop fighting you. I'll give you what you got. If you'll stop fighting and go home, I'll give you what you got. But for me to do that, I want in NATO. I mean, that's what's on the table now. I don't know what will come of that. Maybe nothing, but that is what's going on. We will see. So I'm going to stop right there, and we're going to be dismissed. I did not make it through 40 some odd slides, but I made it through 27. I consider that a win. Okay, I'm going to take the win.